razor, take what's there. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about the revolution.
This week in Radical History for the week starting October 27th. Inspiration came from the Slingshot organizer. Radical info can be found at the Daily Bleed website, and some audio was borrowed from the Radio Roots crew at WBAI in New York.
There is something going on in the ether.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes. Hey!
This week in Radical History for October 27th, 1889, famed anarchist General Nestor Makhno is born in Ukraine. He would lead the anarchist Black Army against the Bolshevik Revolution. From the song dedicated to his life, quote, "Our flag's black in the wind, black for our sorrow, red for our blood," unquote.
People, the time has come.
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Crystal Graham. On this day, October 27th, in 1919, Edmund Goldman, a well-known anarchist and political activist, appeared before federal immigration authorities at Ellis Island to speak out about her deportation order. Goldman had just been released from prison after serving 2 years for opposing the U.S. military draft during World War I. During her hearing, she expressed the irony of a government that waged wars in the name of democracy while it suppressed free speech and criminalized peaceful resistance. Instead, she felt, quote, "Free expression of the hopes and aspirations of people is the greatest and only safety in sane society," unquote. I can get down with that, but I would add that people's free expression of their hopes for their government will also keep us in check. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you to never let the past slip away.
Also on October 27th, 1920, in an attempt to get all the radicals out of Philadelphia textile mills, 40,000 workers are fired en masse. Also in the state in 1932, Bing Crosby would record "Brother, Can You Spare a Dime?" The recording would enjoy considerable popularity in a year when few Americans could afford to buy records. This downbeat song reflected the plight of World War I veterans, thousands of whom decamped in Washington, D.C. this year. These past veterans, known as the Bonus Marchers, were brutally routed via tanks, sabers, and tear gas one night by forces commanded by then Army Chief of Staff Douglas MacArthur, showing once again how disposable veterans are to the government and how much respect they have for them once they are all done up serving their needs. Also on October 27, 1947, the House Un-American Activities Committee calls its first witness to Hollywood loyalty hearings in a grand demonstration of what freedom is really all about in America. Lastly, on October 27, 1990, Muslims, Jehovah Witness materials, propaganda, and satanic books are burned in Dayton, Ohio by a religious right mob. This week in Radical History for October 28, 1902, in Kansas, working woman, universalist, feminist, and anarchist writer Kate Austin dies. Also on October 28, 1929, stock exchange collapse, Black Friday, starting the Great Depression and world economic crisis. Deja vu all over again. Also on this date in 1965, Pope John VI formally absolves the Jews of collective guilt for the crucifixion of Jesus. Today, I, Pope Michael, do not absolve the Catholic Church of all its historic barbarism in the name of its gods. So, mote it be. Today in 1997, a doctor in New York is one of the long string of people injured as a bullet is shot into his home by an anti-abortionist. Most of such assassination attempts are fueled by right-wing hate groups and all in the name of their God. While using religiously fundamentalist ideology, they borrow from groups such as the KKK and Heritage Foundation. Today, 6 Minneapolis residents are facing terrorism charges for the crime of organizing the protests against the RNC last month. Meanwhile, VP candidate Palin would argue that abortion provider assassins are not terrorists in her small hate-filled, God-loving mind. This week in Radical History for October 29, 1901, Leon Czolgosz, anarchist, electrocuted for the assassination of U.S. President McKinley. His last words were, "I killed the president because he's an enemy of the people, the good working people, and I am not sorry for the crime."
People, the time has come.
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Arturo Contreras. On this day, October 29th in 1929, Black Tuesday, also known as the Wall Street Crash of 1929, occurred, devastating the stock market and causing widespread economic panic throughout America. Although there is debate about whether the crash of 29 was a result of the Great Depression or a cause, it is definitely agreed that it was one of the most devastating stock market crashes in American history. The quick drop in stock prices caused bankruptcies and severe financial difficulties for businesses, The result was mass unemployment and quickly deteriorating living conditions for the American working class, which happens to be a majority of the American population. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
50 years later, 1979, up against the wall, direct action disrupts New York Stock Exchange and the financial district in New York. There'd be over 1,000 arrests. Lastly, for October 29, 1966, the National Organization of Women is founded in Washington, D.C. This week in radical history, for October 30, 1967, Martin Luther King Jr. is arrested and jailed in Birmingham, Alabama, on charges stemming from a demonstration 4 years previous. Quote, "I must confess that over the last few years, I have been gravely disappointed with the white moderate. I have almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in the stride toward freedom is not the white citizens' councils, nor the Ku Klux Klanners, but the white moderate who is more devoted to order than to justice." Martin Luther King. Also on October 30th, at the height of tension over World War II coming, the nation, and especially upstate New Yorkers, start to panic at this broadcast, which you're about to hear part of, which was broadcast live, uninterrupted, 70 years ago.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News. At 20 minutes before 8 Central Time, Professor Farrell of the Mount Jennings Observatory, Chicago, Illinois, reports observing several explosions of incandescent gas occurring at regular intervals on the planet Mars. The spectroscope indicates the gas to be hydrogen and moving toward the Earth with enormous velocity in downtown New York.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I? Ladies and gentlemen, here I am, back of a stone wall that joins Mr. Wilmer's garden. From here, I get a sweep of the whole scene. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk and as long as I can see. More state police have arrived. They're drawing up a cordon in front of the pit. About 30 of them. No need to push the crowd back now. They're willing to keep their distance. The captain's conferring with someone. Can't quite see who. Ah, yes, I believe it's Professor Pearson. Yes, it is. Now they've parted, and the professor moves around one side, studying the object while the captain and two policemen advance with something in their hands. I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole. Flag of truce. Those creatures know what that means. What anything means. Wait a minute, something's happening. Some shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against the mirror. It's there. There's a jet of flame springing from the mirror and it leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Lord, they're turning into flame. Oh, the field caught up by the woods of barns. The gas tanks of the automobiles spreading everywhere. Coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill. We continue now with our piano interlude. At least 40 people, including 6 state troopers, lie dead in a field east of the village of Grover's Mill, their bodies burned and distorted beyond all possible recognition.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have a grave announcement to make. Incredible as it may seem, both the observations of science and the evidence of our eyes lead to the inescapable assumption that those strange beings who landed in the Jersey farmlands tonight are the vanguard of an invading army from the planet Mars. The battle which took place tonight at Grover Mills has ended in one of the most startling defeats ever suffered by an army in modern times. 7,000 men armed with rifles and machine guns pitted against a single fighting machine of the invaders from Mars. 120 known survivors. The rest strewn over the battle area from Grover's Mill to Plainsboro, crushed and trampled to death under the metal feet of the monster, or burned to cinders by its heat ray. This is Orson Welles, ladies and gentlemen, out of character, to assure you that the War of the Worlds has no further significance than as the holiday offering it was intended to be. The Mercury Theater's own radio version of dressing up in a sheet and jumping out of a bush and saying boo. Starting now, we couldn't soap all your windows and steal all your garden gates by tomorrow night, so we did the best next thing. We annihilated the world before your very ears and utterly destroyed the CBS. You will be relieved, I hope, to learn that we didn't mean it. So goodbye, everybody, and remember, please, for the next day or so, the terrible lesson you learned tonight. That grinning, glowing, globular invader of your living room is an inhabitant of the pumpkin patch, and if your doorbell rings and nobody's there, that was no Martian. It's Halloween.
Small segment from Orson Welles, War of the Worlds, broadcasted 70 years ago on this date.
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Arturo Contreras. On this day, October 30th in 1973, the Pacifica radio station WBAI aired a monologue called Filthy Words, done by the comedian George Carlin. In his routine, Carlin listed and made fun of the seven dirty words, words which cannot now be uttered over public airwaves. Apparently, a complaint was filed with the Federal Communications Commission, or the FCC. Although this was the only complaint filed, it eventually landed the Pacifica Foundation in a Supreme Court case against the FCC. The final ruling was in favor of the FCC, and it established many restrictions on the content of publicly broadcast material. Although these indecency rules apply to all American media outlets, the penalties and fines are much more damaging to community radio stations such as the Pacifica stations, who aren't funded by corporate advertising. How unfortunate. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
This week in Radical History for October 31st, 1517. Apropos of Halloween, Protestant Reformation begins as Martin Luther King nails his 95 theses to the door of the Castle Church in Wittenberg. Also on October 31st, humanist anthropologist Joseph Campbell, 83, is now a myth himself, on this date in 1987. This week in Radical History for November 2nd, I only got three items, 1920. Imprisoned anti-war and labor activist Eugene Debs receives over 1 million votes for president. Imagine how he would have done if he was actually outside of jail when he ran for president. Also on this date in 1972, 500 Native American protests the Trail of Broken Tears as Native Americans march to occupy the Bureau of Indian Affairs offices in Washington, D.C. for 6 days. Also sadly, in 2006, the University of Oaxaca is attacked in the AM with tear gas and shots reported on campus. Radio APO is at the center of this month's long struggle inside the university, still broadcasting. Earlier this week, indie media reporter Brad Will was gunned down by state militia in Oaxaca barricades, covering the atrocities of the Mexican government against the people of Oaxaca. Thanks for tuning in to this week's This Week in Radical History, produced out of the Glee Glee Studios. Normally this segment runs about 20 minutes long, so today on the third anniversary week of Brad Will's death, I'll be playing a portion of the kind of memorial segment I produced on my weekly indie media radio program from 2 years ago about Brad Will and his life and death. So this segment will run from now to about the 20-minute mark this week. So until next week when we meet again, I am forever yours and always in the struggle, Mike Cannon. And again, Brad Will, presente. Normally in the beginning of my show, this is the Mike Cannon Show, Indie Media Radio for Central Wisconsin, by the way, I try to keep it light, keep it a little fun before we go into the news, the non-corporate news I feature on my show each week. However, this week is a little different. This week is the one-year anniversary of the indie media reporter, anarchist, and activist death, Brad Will. I knew Brad only slightly as one of the many interesting newer comrades active in trying to make a positive change in this world. However, his death affected me and many in our community pretty dramatically. It demonstrated to us firsthand how draconian the forces we fight, or at least try to shine a light on, can be. Brad was unique, but his death, sadly, was not unique. From Brad Will's death in Mexico last year to Rachel Connie's death earlier at the hands of Israeli occupation forces as she tried to stop a U.S.-made bulldozer from illegally demolishing a Palestinian doctor's home, to what we now know as what's happening in Darfur, to the 1 million-plus Iraqis who have died since the start of the war, many innocent people so rudely just get snuffed out and forgotten as the rest of the world pays little or no heed to their plight. In this country in particular, where six major corporations own something like 90% of the media the average American gets spoon-fed to them each week, of course these unflattering images and stories are not going to be told. Don't draw back that curtain, and certainly don't look in the mirror, America. So instead of my normal fun-loving self, I dedicate this first part of my show to Brad Will on the anniversary of his death, with an edited rebroadcast of Democracy Now! Amy Goodman did last year. I took out a little of the struggles about Oaxaca, Mexico, that Brad Will was covering when the Mexican forces assassinated him last year. Not because it's not an important issue, because like so many of the times before, we know the answer to the story. It is a story that happens when the powerless confront the powerful who have guns. And after Brad Will's death last year, paramilitary forces, not unlike paramilitary forces in Colombia, are working with the multinational companies in Nigeria right now. They manage to kidnap or outright kill enough people to put down any chance of self-government, self-rule, or even just a little bit of dignity for that matter. So it is an old story played out time and time again in Politic Royale. So today I concentrate more on Brad Will's story. On today's show you'll hear a lot about Brad Will's life and all his struggles and activism. I just want to let you know that Brad Will spent a lot of time in southwest Wisconsin in his younger days, and I believe his folks brought his body back to Wisconsin for interment. Again, here is the edited version of Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! Broadcast, where you get to hear a little bit about Brad's life and his struggles and his causes. Lest we forget, Brad Will Presente.
When they poured across the border, I was cautioned to surrender. This I could not do. I took my gun and vanished. I have changed my name so often. I've lost my wife and children, but I've many friends, and some of them are with me. An old woman gave us shelter, kept us hidden in the garret. Then the soldiers came. She died without a whisper.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
Brad Will! Presente! Emilio Alfonso Fabian! Presente!
Mourners gather outside the Mexican consulate in New York to pay tribute to journalist and activist Brad Will. He was shot dead in Oaxaca, Mexico, Friday. He died with his camera in his hands. We'll go to Oaxaca, where thousands of federal police have been deployed to crush the popular uprising. And we'll remember Brad Will with those who knew him best.
Brad was just completely full of heart and courage. He was a big risk taker. He always did the riskiest part of any action. But unlike a lot of people who are intense that way, he did it out of love, not out of ideology.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In the Mexican city of Oaxaca, thousands of federal police, backed with armored vehicles and helicopters, have raided the southern city in an attempt to crush the popular uprising in the region. Federal police have reportedly seized control of the city square. At least two protesters died last night, including a 15-year-old boy. On Friday, gunmen with ties to the government shot and killed three other people, including the U.S. journalist and activist Brad Will. Five men connected to Will's shooting have been turned over to state authorities. The suspected gunmen have been identified as two members of local city hall, two police officers, and the former justice of the peace of a nearby town. Brad Will was filming on his video camera when he was shot in the stomach. The sound of the shooting was captured on his camera. Brad Will died as he was being taken to the hospital. He was 36 years old. The break today is Brad Will singing.